ओम भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। एवं त्वं निरनुक्रोशो बालानां मति विद दारेहे प्रसा I'm sorry, परसदा मध्ये चरसि यशो हा निरपत्रपः एवं त्वं निरनुक्रोशो बालानां मतिभिर्दरेहे पार्षदा मध्ये चरसि यशो हा निरपत्रपः एवं त्वं निरनुक्रोशो बालानां मतिभिर्दरेहे पार्षदा मध्ये चरसि यशो हा निरपत्रपः Prodigies, please. Evam, thus, tvam, you, Narada, nirnukroshaha, without compassion, balanam, of innocent, inexperienced boys, matibi, contaminating the consciousness, harehe, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parshada Madhye, among the personal associates, Charasi, travel, Yashaha, defaming the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nirapatrapaha, although you do not know what you are doing, you are executing sinful activities. Without shame. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By the way, I forgot to mention earlier, but this is the sixth canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Narada Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha, text number 38. Prajapati Daksha continued, thus committing violence against other living entities, and yet claiming to be an associate of Lord Vishnu, you are defaming the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You needlessly create a mentality of renunciation in innocent boys, and therefore you are shameless and devoid of compassion. How could you travel with the personal associates of the Supreme Lord? Purport. This mentality of Prajapati Daksha still continues even today. When young boys join the Krishna consciousness movement, their fathers and so-called guardians are very angry at the propounder of the Krishna consciousness movement because they think that their sons have been unnecessarily induced to deprive themselves of the material enjoyments of eating, drinking, and merrymaking. Karmis, fruit of workers, think that one should fully enjoy his present life in this material world and also perform some pious activities to be promoted to higher planetary systems for further enjoyment in the next life. A yogi, however, especially a bhakti yogi, is callous to the opinions of this material world. He is not interested in traveling to the higher planetary systems of the demigods to enjoy a long life in an advanced materialistic civilization. As stated by Prabodhananda Sarasvati, Kaivalyam Narakayate Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. For a devotee, merging into the Brahman existence is hellish, and life in the higher planetary systems of the demigods is a will-o'-the-wisp, a phantasmagoria with no real existence at all. A pure devotee is not interested in yogic perfection, travel to higher planetary systems, or oneness with Brahman. He is interested only in rendering service to the supreme, to the personality of Godhead. Since Prajapati Daksha was a karmi, he could not appreciate the great service Narada Muni had rendered his 11,000 sons. Instead, he accused Narada Muni of being sinful and charged that because Narada Muni was associated with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord would also be defamed. Thus, Daksha criticized that Narada Muni was an offender to the Lord, although he was known as an associate of the Lord. Om Agyanate Marandasya Ganjan Shanashalakaya Chakshar Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namaung Vishnupadai Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Paladananda Swayantimone Namaung Vishnupadai Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swayantimone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Adi Sacharne. So, this particular section here is very appropriate for all practitioners of Krishna consciousness. And it's also very aptly describes the mentality of the regular materialistic people within this world. And most people in this material world think along the lines of Prajapati Daksha. They're karmis at heart. And so they view that the perfection of life is eating, drinking, and merrymaking, as Prabhupada says in the purport here. And if somehow or other all this merrymaking gets interrupted, then all the fun is taken out of life. There have been occasions where when I've been out on Sankirtan, people have asked, well, what is it that you guys actually do and don't do? You know, like, what are the regulations? And so I've explained the four regulative principles to people, and they just say, oh, well, that takes all the fun out of it. You know, because and even Prabhupada mentioned that, for instance, Lord Zetland was at one time in charge of administering the affairs of, I think it was Calcutta. And so he was favorable to what he thought was Hinduism. And then he went back to London, to Zetland, actually. And then when a godbrother of Prabhupada went out to London to establish a preaching center before Prabhupada went to the U.S., this Lord of Zetland You know, he came to his various programs and he asked Prabhupada's godbrother. He said, "Oh, Swamiji, you know, can you make me a Brahmin too?" And so Prabhupada's godbrother said, "Yes, of course, no problem. Anyone can become Brahmin." So Lord Zetlin said, "Well, what's required?" And he said, "Well, no taking intoxicants, including tea and cigarettes, you know, tobacco. No illicit sex. No gambling and no meat eating." And Lord Zetlin said, "Oh, this is impossible." You know, and this was so many years ago. This was, I don't even know when he went over to London, but it was at least like 60 years ago or more. And then what to speak of, you know, this historic account from the Bhagavatam, this was millions of years ago. And we can see that even today, this is still how materialistic people think. Materialistic people think that the more I eat, the more I drink, the more I mate, and the better I can defend, then the better person I am. And the more physical endowment that I've been born with to enjoy these four illicit activities, then the more people should respect me. And if somebody is born with better facility for enjoying these illicit activities, then I respect them more. I remember a long time ago when I was up in Santa Barbara, there was one friend of mine who was rather materialistic, and he didn't have a very high opinion of another friend of mine. You know, and so my friend, he was like working out, trying to get strong. And then one day they went down to the beach, and my materialistic friend saw this other friend without his shirt on. He said, "Oh, now I have so much more respect for you. Just look at those biceps." So this is how materialistic people think. They base everything upon the bodily concept of life, based upon karma, for who can enjoy the most. If I can enjoy more than somebody else, they should respect me. And if somebody else enjoys better than I can, then I respect them. And they think that by doing this, then they'll actually attain happiness, that they'll be peaceful, that they'll be satisfied. But this is never the case. That's why it was really nice, the little section that Savasprabhu read this morning. I really liked that verse. I remember when I first read it, I was very inspired by it. And he read it again this morning. It comes from the Bhagavatam, the second canto, second chapter, text number 4. Translation is, "When there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what's the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what's the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what's the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering, or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing?" And then Prabhupada makes some very nice point in the purport here. He says, here the idea given by Srila Shukadeva Goswami is that the reserve energy of human life, which is far superior to that of the animals, should simply be utilized for self-realization. Advancement of human civilization must be towards the goal of establishing our lost relationship with God, which is not possible in any other form of life other than the human. One must realize the nullity of the material phenomena, considering it a passing phantasmagoria, and must endeavor to make a solution to the miseries of life. Self-complacence with a polished type of animal civilization geared to sense gratification is delusion, and such a civilization is not worthy of the name. In pursuit of such false activities, A human being is in the clutches of Maya, or illusion. So the point is, if we simply limit ourselves to eating, drinking, and merrymaking, then we're limiting ourselves to an animal experience in life. But you can see how deep the illusion runs, because in modern times, people think that the more I enjoy, then the more spiritual it actually is, because my enjoyment is on the spontaneous platform. It's uninhibited. Therefore, I'm really expressing my spiritual nature. Like most people consider sex to be the most spiritual, the pinnacle of spiritual experience here in this world. But it couldn't be further from the truth. It's actually the pinnacle of material degradation. It causes so much psychological disturbance when it's indulged in unrestrictedly. And besides, even if this is the pinnacle of spirituality, the human body isn't properly fit to pursue such a spiritual goal. There are other bodies in the animal kingdom that are much better qualified to do this. There's so many animals that can have hundreds of children at a time. Even a spider can lay, you know, hundreds of eggs. A bedbug can lay a dozen eggs every other day. You know, hogs and dogs, monkeys. You go to Vrindavan and you see monkeys just doing it out in the open. You know, hogs, they do it indiscriminately, as Prabhupada says, with their mothers, with their daughters. So as far as these things go, the animals have us beat on all counts. Anything that a human can do, an animal can do much better. Much more proficient at it. Humans think that they're so powerful and strong, yet you take an ape, and even a chimpanzee is supposedly 10 times stronger than a human. And a chimpanzee is no bigger than a child, yet he's 10 times stronger. So, the point being made by Shukadeva Goswami in that verse from the second canto of the Bhagavatam is that on all accounts, animals have us beat. So what is it that all this energy that we've been given as human beings, what is it that this energy is meant for? What is it that this energy is supposed to be used for? You know, so the point is that we should minimize on this animalistic, on these animalistic propensities of life. And we should really focus on what the ultimate purpose of this human form of existence is, which is namely to reestablish and understand our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada also mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita, about how we should really minimize the amount of sense gratification that we perceive that we need. Like in the 17th chapter of the Gita, text number 16, talking about the... Well, 14, 15, and 16 talk about the three types of austerities. Austerities of the body, austerities of speech, and austerity of the mind. So text 16 specifically mentions austerity of the mind. Austerity of the mind is defined as satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's own existence. Prabhupada explains in the purport that to make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity and thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and so there is no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. So this is extremely important for people all over the world, but especially for practitioners of Krishna consciousness. Because really, to obtain perfection in this practice of bhakti yoga, we have to come to at least to the point of satisfaction, of having an undistracted mind. If our mind is distracted by sense gratification, if we're continually dissatisfied with our situation, how can we possibly practice Krishna consciousness? How can we possibly be conscious of Krishna? Rather, we'll be conscious of all the different myriad things that our mind fancies that we would rather be doing. So when we're in kirtan, we're instead thinking about where we want to go, what we want to do during the day. While we're chanting japa, we're thinking about our long-lost friend that we haven't seen in 20 years and thinking about this wonderful vacation that we're going to go on later on or whatever, fantasizing about all the things we wish we could be doing. Oh, all those materialistic people, they have it so much better than me. Just see all the things that they can do and I'm forbidden from doing. So this is the nature of a dissatisfied mind. With a dissatisfied mind, we can never really truly relish the experience of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is a very subtle experience. It's not a gross experience. It's not like somebody just comes by and hits you over the head with Krishna consciousness and you're like, oh, well, that's what it is. No, it's more like a very subtle thing that slowly starts to pervade your consciousness. And then without even realizing it, its approach, all of a sudden you're just surrounded by it. And then you really relish the taste of it. However, even at the slightest thought of pursuing your own sense gratification, poof, it all disappears. It's very illusory. When you try to grab hold of it, it's not there. As long as we try to grab hold with our material senses. So that's why it's really so important that we detach ourselves from all this hankering and lamenting, from all these illusory desires. Just like Srila Prabodhananda Sarasvati Thakur said in that, what Prabhupada quoted from him in the actual verse for today, Akasha Pushpayate. Akasha refers to the air. And Pushpayate refers to flowers that are falling. So Akasha Pushpayate, that's like flowers showering up in the heavenly planets. You know, so somebody going up to the heavenly planets enjoying a standard of sense gratification that dwarfs anything possible here on this earthly planet. Yet what is it? It's just sky flowers. How long do flowers stay in the sky? Not very long. If you drop a flower from the balcony up here, it comes down to the ground pretty quick. So Prabodhananda Sarasvati, he's saying, what's the use of these sky flowers? Sure, for some time I'll be up there, but in no time flat, I'll be back down here again. So why go through? Why bother with all this useless endeavor for something that's just temporary, for something that won't actually provide me any happiness, for something that will simply disturb my mind and disturb the minds of those around me? But at the same time, everything should be taken in proper perspective. Prabhupada said that sense gratification is a lot like salt. Everyone has a different requirement, a different level that they need to function. Some people need more, some people need less. For one person, they taste one dish and it tastes way too salty for them, and another person tastes the same dish and they can't even eat it because there's not enough salt in there. So in the same way, that's why it's always recommend that we follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, rather than trying to imitate. Trying to imitate means that even though we may need one cup of salt, where the acharyas may need only one grain of salt. So if we artificially try to adjust to having only one grain of salt, we won't have any satisfaction. It'll simply be an artificial endeavor and it won't last because our senses are too addicted to having so much salt, to having so much sense gratification. So that's why engaging in this process of Krishna consciousness requires honesty. It requires, you know, being realistic. And starting from where you find yourself. And then gradually, over the course of time, you progress. You make steady progress. You know, just like Prabhupada said, that Krishna consciousness should be, the practitioner should aim to try to minimize eating and sleeping as much as possible. It's not that just overnight we can jump to the stage that Raghunath Das Goswami was, sleeping only an hour or so every night, eating only a couple of drops of Charanamrita every other day. Most people would probably die pretty quick if they tried doing that, because they're not getting any energy from the spiritual world. So therefore, we have to engage according to our degree of realization and then follow in the footsteps of the great souls who have actually made progress and achieved real spiritual realization. And by following their example, we too can also make some progress and minimize as much as possible the unnecessary sense gratification that everyone's so enamored with. So I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Omkara Prabhu. You were talking about the austerities of the mind, specifically satisfaction, simplicity, gravity. How do we practically apply this? It seems to me like when I read that verse, it's like a nice ideal to meditate on, but I don't think about how to utilize gravity, utilize simplicity. Can you give us an example which might make us a bit more relevant for us?
Please turn the mic off. Well, gravity refers to in other places, it's referred to, in reference to gravity, it gives the example of Krishna not all the time revealing what's on his mind. You know, so somebody may have big plans, But if they're grave, they may not reveal everything that's going on. Like for some people, there's no filter between what's going on in here and what's coming out here. Anything that happens here comes out immediately out through here. And those people have no gravity. They're not grave at all. And they're usually not very thoughtful people either. They just tend to blather on and on about nothing, wasting so much words. So that's not very austere. There's no austerity of the mind. There's no conscious analysis of what it is that the mind is even contemplating. They're just letting the mind go unrestricted, and then whatever the mind uselessly thinks about pointlessly comes out of their mouth. So that's an example of gravity. And simplicity comes from, let me see here. Simplicity and satisfaction both kind of go hand in hand. Because to really be satisfied, one has to have a certain degree of simplicity. If one is very complicated, they'll all the time be unsatisfied. Because all their plans, all their ideas, all their concepts are very intricate. And it requires so much endeavor. Where when one is simple, whatever situation they find themselves in, they can be satisfied. Like for instance, Sudama Brahman. He was extremely poor. He was so poor that when he went to go and visit Krishna, his wife couldn't even get together anything in the household as an offering of love to be given to Krishna. Rather, what she had to do is tear off a patch from one of her very raveled saris that had holes in it. Then she had to go begging for some chipped rice. Not even like high quality rice. You know, it's like low grade rice that's chipped. And she had to go begging door to door just for this lowest grade of rice. And so then when Sudama Brahman went to go and see Krishna, he was so embarrassed that he didn't even bother trying to offer this to Krishna. But at the same time, despite his poverty-stricken condition, he was so satisfied in that situation because he had a certain degree of simplicity. He was happy, he was satisfied simply engaging in Krishna's service. And so this poverty didn't bother him. He was actually very happy. And so then when he was talking with Krishna in Dwarka, he never even asked Krishna, "Oh, my dear Krishna, can I have some Lakshmi?" Because that's why his wife sent him. He didn't even ask that. You know, he consciously thought, "I'm not going to ask Krishna this question." But yet Krishna, out of his love for him, he steals that bag of chipped rice from him and starts eating it. And then he volunteers. He says, "You know, my dear Sudama Brahman, I'm going to give you so much opulence, it'll put the demigods to shame." And yet, even in the before and after, so even when Sudama Brahman went back to his abode, even though he had more opulence than Indra, he was still peaceful and satisfied. Because of his simplicity. He knew that this is Krishna's wealth, and it's meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. None of this really, truly belongs to me. Therefore, I'm still satisfied and happy in engaging in my service. So whether he's rich or poor, rather, you know, despite the circumstances, despite the dualities that he may find himself in, due to the simplicity of mind, the austerity of the mind to be simple. And due to being satisfied, therefore he wasn't disturbed by any conditions that he found himself in. So we can also take that. And when we start, when those feelings in the heart start getting all riled up, thinking, oh my God, what about this and what about that? How am I going to do this and how am I going to do that? And then the whirlwind of the mind just starts getting out of control. Just realize, wait a minute, what's the big deal? A Christian can maintain hundreds of thousands of elephants, like a wild elephant in Africa. Do you know how much it eats every day? 700 pounds of food. And here we're worried about maintaining 1 pound of food. They're having 700 pounds of food every single day. They don't have a job. They don't work. How are they maintaining themselves? Because Krishna is supplying the necessities of all living species. And so if Krishna can maintain all the elephants, all the whales, all the life on this planet, what is there really, what is there that we have to worry about? So you have to coach yourself. You have to coach yourself, you have to coach your mind. Hey, what is it that you're freaking out about? Why are you being so complex? Why are you being so unreasonable? And then you can control your mind. You can bring your mind to a point of simplicity. And when you have that simplicity, you'll be satisfied. You'll be satisfied in whatever situation you find yourself. Another example. There was this, my guru told me about this guy in Europe. He did some crime, I forget what it was, and he was sent to prison. But in jail, they have a pool and, barbecues and this thing and that thing. So even though he was in prison, he was very satisfied. And, his brother, who was also a criminal, was thinking, oh, let me break him out. So he broke into the jail, found his brother and said, hey, come on, let's go. I'm breaking you out. And he said, no, get away from here. Get away. Can't you see? I'm enjoying my barbecue. I have my friends here, my barbecue. So even though, it's like a bad situation, but still, he's satisfied. And his brother, he had so many complex plans in life. Oh, this thing and that thing. Avoiding the law, and we got our next heist, and this thing, and all these different ideas and concoctions. And so his plans were frustrated when he went to go and take his brother out of jail. So no matter what the situation you find yourself in, you can always be peaceful, you can always be simple and satisfied, even though it may be a perturbing situation. Or even though it may be, a very opulent situation. Is that okay? Archita Prabhu?
Very nice answer. Just to add a little something, simplicity for Brahmacharya means just following the instruction of the spiritual master. That's why you're in ashram. Don't go to ashram to make complex plans about this and that. The Brahmacharya goes to ashram and stays in ashram and then follows. It's simply following the instruction of the spiritual master. Where is that? But let me say, spiritual master only be telling you what to find, and then he makes his self-worship pass the one of the three books. He may say, well, I'm having enough to find, it doesn't matter. We're being voluntary, we really need to have one thing. Just do what the spiritual master tells you. Or, the same way, the same way,
thank you. Yeah, so just for the benefit of the internet audience, the simplicity for a brahmachari, for one who is in the ashram, their simplicity is that of dependence. To be dependent upon the order of the spiritual master or their authorities within the temple. Anyone else? Jai Shri Madhva Gautam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.